Coming up on Golf Today, the stars are out in Hollywood, including the world number one Scottie Scheffler, chasing a first ever title at the Genesis Invitational. Can Scottie carry his momentum from Pebble to L.A.? And speaking of Pebble, Colin Morikawa's coach Rick Sessinghaus stops by to talk the details of Colin's win, including the importance of the mental side of the game. And Tiger meets the media at Riviera in 90 minutes. We'll carry it live. His thoughts on the PGA Tour's future and his own future. That's coming up right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 15-time major champ and tournament host Tiger Woods will address the media at the Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club, Pacific Palisades. Always a treat to get the thoughts of the 82-time PGA Tour winner. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Rex Hoggen. We've covered a lot of Tiger Woods' press conferences. I still get a little giddy in anticipation, I must admit.
I think it's gotten to the point where earlier in my career, the Wednesday at Bay Hill was my favorite Wednesday of the year because you had an opportunity to talk to Arnold Palmer about everything. He would cover 15 different topics during those press conferences, and it was so much fun. It was so enlightening. It connected generations. It's the same thing now with Jack Nicklaus when we go to Memorial. But it turns out it's starting to feel that way with Tiger Woods. Honestly, late last year at the Hero World Challenge when he spoke, I kept thinking to myself, this is starting to feel like those Arnie and Jack Wednesdays, where he sits down and we just cover a litany of topics. It's the PGA Tour. It's what's the schedule going to look like? How do you feel? When do you think you're going to play? Are you going to play the PGA Tour champions? It's just fun.
He's a fount of knowledge, but there's always a little bit of a hope. You know, when are you going to play? When are you going to come back? What's the state of the body and the game? But before we look ahead to Tiger, I want to look back at the last few weeks on the PGA Tour Farmers Insurance Open. It was Justin Rose who took the title in dominant fashion. Do you recall? Fired that final round, 2 under par 70 to cruise to a 7-shot victory at Torrey Pines. Next week, WM, Phoenix Open. Chris Gaudreau, opportunistic, outlasted Hideki on the first hole of a playoff to earn his second title of the season. Big Chris now has 4 career PGA Tour victories.
And then go to last week on Sunday. It was all Colin Morikawa. He was back in the winner's circle on the PGA Tour for the first time since that 2023 Bay Current Classic. It was a strong weekend for Colin, who shot rounds of 62, 67 to win by a single shot after holding off a late charge from world number one, Scottie Scheffler. Now the West Coast swing wraps up this week in Los Angeles with the Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club. The tour then shifts to the beginning of the Florida Swing and the Cognizant Classic as we get closer to the start of the Players Championship in March.
Yeah, fun time of year. Another signature event means another strong field in Southern California, headlined by the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, already a winner this season at the American Express. The last few weeks have included some close calls. He did finish tied for 4th on Sunday at Pebble. Also in this field, world number two, Rory McIlroy, teeing it up at the Genesis Invitational. His best finish in this event 4 years ago, 2022, finished tied for 10th. Rory coming off a tied for 14th finish in his PGA Tour debut last week at Pebble Beach.
And then 2025 FedEx Cup champion Tommy Fleetwood is another notable name to watch. Last year, Tommy finished tied for 5th in this event, and his performance over the years, over the last few years, has included 3 consecutive top 20 finishes. Now, it's no surprise. It is a strong field this week at Riviera. Take a look at this, Damon. All 10 of the top 10 players in the world ranking, 27 of the top 37 FedEx Cup champions, and 59 PGA Tour winners. Woo. Tiger always gets a top field. This golf club always gets a top field. And we always get the top talent coming from our side of it. Let's head out to Riviera right now to our very own Todd Lewis, who is on the property. Todd, I noticed you brought your rain jacket with you from Pebble Beach. I was looking at the weather app this morning. It seems like that was a good idea.
Yeah, not only rain jacket, I have umbrella. I have hand warmers. I mean, it's not the best day today here in LA because that system that was hitting Pebble Beach continues to crank up a lot of moisture here in California. As a matter of fact, on Monday, Over 2 inches of rain fell on the property here at Riviera, and the golf course for a majority of the day was closed. Even the driving range for a majority of the day was closed. But fortunately, the maintenance staff was able to get out on the golf course. They drained the bunkers, and it has drained pretty well. And now it is playable. We are seeing some players go out and play this iconic golf course. But if you take a look at the forecast over the next couple of days, the rain is going to continue to fall here in Southern California. As a matter of fact, tonight, we are expecting 3/4 inch of rain. That's no good. And then on Thursday, the first day of competition here at Riviera, 1/2 inch of rain is supposed to fall. So this is going to be a very, very soft golf course, which is a bummer because this iconic track, when it's fast and firm, is really a challenge. As a matter of fact, a lot of the PGA Tour players say it's one of the best tracks on the PGA Tour, but likely going to have, at least on Thursday, preferred lies here at the Genesis Invitational. Now, when they do go out and play, you'll notice a couple significant changes to Riviera, beginning with a par 3 fourth hole. This hole has basically been totally redone. The tee has been backed up into the hills. It's a redan green, but it has really been lengthened. It can play as long as 270 yards. That's a par three. Likely not playing that long this week. It'll probably be in the 200 to 240 range, depending on how much moisture is on the golf course and hole locations. But not only is the fourth hole significantly different, but the iconic 18th hole, the amphitheater green, well, it's been lengthened as well. The new tee was put there, making it just a shade under 500 yards. So instead of short irons, some players may be hitting mid irons into these greens, especially into this green, I should say, especially with soft conditions. So 18 will play a little different as well. 4 brand new holes, we talked about, that long par 3. Also, there's another change. If you remember last year, the 15th hole, Victor Hovland and maybe another player or two went down the 17th hole off the tee. Well, that's not going to happen now because they've planted some pretty big trees there. So you got to play it as it's designed to play. So a different style of golf course here at Riviera. It's been tweaked a little bit. It's going to be soft, but still, it's going to be a great, great competition. Genesis Invitational, signature event, coming off a signature event last week. So we will see who will rise to the occasion.
All right. Todd Lewis reporting with his umbrella. When there's a little bit of rain, it's an umbrella. When there's a lot of rain, it's an umbrella. We'll hear from Todd in the next hour as well. All right, folks, how about the headline for this week? Forget the weather, but what's the biggest story at Riviera in your mind for 2026?
I've written some headlines. You've written some headlines in your career.
Yeah.
This one's pretty easy. It's the return to Riv. That's it. Hmm. Full stop. You do it in 30-point text. Everyone has the attention. And you know what we're talking about. Last year, the devastating fires that just destroyed parts of Los Angeles. Yeah. Just heartbreaking images that we saw. I was on my way to the American Express event early last year, and there was still a lot of debate about, can the PGA Tour even play Riviera? And I remember going into that neighborhood and just seeing the devastation and knowing right then and there that we're not going to be able to. Mm. The PGA Tour cannot be in this neighborhood, not because the golf course was impacted, but because there were so many other things in the neighborhood needed at that time. And I made this contention yesterday when we were talking about the tournament. I always argue that the PGA Tour is at its best when these communities that the tour's been in for so long are impacted by devastating wildfires or some other catastrophe. The PGA Tour always steps up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing that Torrey Pines was able to step in last year, but it's wonderful that the Genesis is back at Riviera. This is the 100th playing, by the way, of the Genesis Invitational. First played in 1926. And think about the history of this event. Charlie Sifford won in 1969. Ben Hogan won 3 times from 47 to 48, including a U.S. Open. Tiger Woods made his debut in 1992. I think about the sports writers who have walked through those gates of that property. I think about the late, great Jim Murray, who used to write wonderful columns about this event. I think about Thomas Bonk, our friend, yeah, who was a longtime golf writer for the L.A. Times. This is an important event for the PGA Tour. It is L.A. specific. It's part of the soul of the city and the soul of this PGA Tour schedule as well.
And it means so much to you, being from there, going to college in L.A. I understand that this is a huge week for you. And we had this debate a few weeks ago, and actually it goes back to last year. I think I was at the Scottish Open, and I made the mention that this is my most enjoyable fortnight in golf, between the Scottish Open and going to the Open Championship. And it had more to do with just being overseas and being in the different elements and seeing the way links golf is different. But our colleague, Doug Ferguson, who is also from the L.A. area, he pointed out this is the best fortnight in golf. Last week at Pebble Beach and this week at Riviera. It's just special.
Yeah, I've called it the most soulful 2-week stretch of the PGA Tour schedule. and I mean that. And I think the players think that. I think they'd be there. It's obviously a signature event. This is an important event, but it's also, it benefits the TGR Foundation. Tiger is the host. You know that the players want to be there for him, for the guy who set the table in this game for the last 20 years. But the golf course itself is a star. Just from an architectural standpoint, what George Thomas and Billy Bell did in this canyon in Pacific Palisades, the shot values, and the anomaly that Tiger never won here. Scotty hasn't won here. Rory hasn't won here. I mean, this is a feather. This is a wonderful event. I mean, you want this on your resume if you're one of the best players in the world.
Two things. Before we came up, we were looking at the first hole. Todd Lewis was getting ready for his hit. And you and I get into a debate about should it be a par four or a par five. You only do that. We only have these debates at certain golf courses. Yeah. And it's the ones that you remember hole by hole. It's Augusta National. It's Pebble Beach. It's Riviera. For me, it's Colonial. I love that golf course. But it's very few that you can dig into it. But you touched on it. You just went through the list of winners at this place. Scotty's never won here. Rory's never won here. Tiger's never won here. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what. I mean, Tiger's 50 in the house, so it may be tough for him to do it. But you know this is top of mind for Scotty and Rory. And Rory talked about what winning at Pebble meant last year. Winning at a cathedral of this game. Make no mistake, Riviera Country Club is a cathedral of this game.
When it comes to Scotty, it feels like just a matter of time.
Yeah, this Let's week, be baby.
I could see it. The way he says, as long as he gets off to a good start on Thursday. All right, a reminder to stay tuned to Golf Today as Tiger Woods, the tournament host of this week's Genesis Invitational, will meet the media at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll carry it live right here. Now, coming up next on the show, we'll be joined by the longtime swing and mental coach for Colin Morikawa. What are his takeaways from Colin's win on Sunday, and what does he think were the keys to success? We'll find out next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And we're back on Golf Today. These were some of the images from Sunday on the 18th green at Pebble Beach as Colin Morikawa broke through for his first win on the PGA Tour in nearly 3 years. Colin finished strong down the stretch with a closing birdie to seal the victory. Take a look at Colin's career here. That was his seventh PGA Tour victory on Sunday at Pebble Beach. It includes two major championships, the 2020 PGA Championship and 2021 Open Championship. And he moved up to fifth in the official World Golf Ranking. He's been on five U.S. teams, three Ryder Cup teams, two President's Cup teams. And following his victory on Sunday at Pebble Beach, he gave a fascinating interview with the media.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't, I don't know if thinking is the right word. I think it was more just believing and knowing why I'm here. I think I've been trying to make golf so perfect, trying to hit these shots and trying to make these putts in a certain way that maybe others are doing it, that you forget how to play the game of golf. And I think looking back when I was 10, 12, 15, growing up on Chevy Chase, playing 10 holes, dropping three balls, like I played golf. And I've gone so far away from that creativity of that side, that I think the last 2 days, I went to go play golf. And I caught myself today, even after the bogey on five, I was like, man, I love being in this position. Like I hadn't felt that in such a long time. And you feel that on the team events, you feel that here and there, but I just told myself, like, man, like it just felt so good to be in that position. And I knew when I was able to convince myself, but just talk to myself in my head that way, you know, that I was ready, whether it went great or what not, you know, it didn't go great. I was ready to go execute the shots, play golf, and not worry about the wind, not worry about the rain, not worry about, you know, man, if I make bogey on eight and then I go try and make pars on 9 and 10, it was very in the moment stuff. But I think it all comes back to how you start the day. And, you know, I started the day this morning telling myself, yeah, let's go out and win this thing.
Some deep thoughts from Colin. Well, Rick Sessinghouse is Colin's swing and mental coach. He's been with Colin for quite a while, working with him since he was 8 years old. And as a doctor of applied sports psychology, Rick emphasizes the mental aspect, helping with routines and focus and performing under pressure. He's the founder and CEO of Sessinghouse Performance Systems, neuroscience-based performance expert. Also one of Golf Digest's 50 Best Teachers in America and the author of Golf, the Ultimate Mind Game. And Rick joins us now from Riviera Congratulations, first of all. We all saw this emotion from Colin on 18. We saw the weight, the approach shot, the two putts from the rough, and then the hug with Kat. What was that like for you experiencing that final half hour?
Oh, it was unbelievable. Thanks for having me on. I think it was more nerve-wracking for me than him as the player. He was in control of it. Here I'm just yelling at my TV and such. So I'm so happy for him, and I just love the joy that he showed after the win, and just extremely proud of him.
How do you quantify how big of a jump it was from earlier in the week when you guys were on the range and Colin was literally asking the TaylorMade reps, how do you hit a fade, to ended up on Sunday beating one of the best fields in all of golf?
Yeah, I think it's always interesting when he's asking somebody how to hit a fade when that is his bread and butter. And I think as some of his conversations afterwards is that I think he was overthinking the whole process of golf instead of playing golf and trusting those instincts that are within him, as he was that kid that grew up at that local course in Glendale, California, where you're playing, you're being creative, you're trying new things, and you're being an athlete, right? And I think he's gone down some roads where he's tried to be perfect. He has high expectations, high standards, and he's trying harder and harder to get better. And unfortunately, it gets in the way sometimes.
Well, you know, elite athletes can be really hard on themselves. In some ways, that's a good thing, though. It keeps them accountable. It keeps them hungry. But there is a dark side, a negative side to being hard on yourself. How do you strike that balance as a coach?
Sure. I mean, I like to say be curious more than critical. Certainly you want to problem solve. You want to learn. You want to grow. But once you start getting into that critical self-judgment, I don't think you're learning anymore. And you could be hard on yourself and call that a good attribute. But unfortunately, you're not learning and you're not actually growing to move to that next step. So I think being hard on yourself, okay, high standards and stuff. But I think when it gets mixed into expectations, like I should be doing this, I should, instead of, wait, what's in my control? What's my behavior? What are my routines? What's the mindset that we can bring to shot to shots? And he embraced that over the weekend for sure.
When we hear Colin say on Sunday night that he, quotes, just wanted to go out and play golf, I guess we understand it as golfers. But for you, what does that look like when you're watching Colin on the golf course? Can you see it and how he's playing in the moment?
100%. I think on 16 was a great example. You may have a certain number that his caddy may give him, but he is giving you more of a gut instinct of, I'm going to hit that little six iron. I'm going to cut it. I'm going to grip down on it. And when you get creative, kind of like that artist, that's when he's at his best, instead of, I need to hit a stock shot. I need it to be a perfect golf swing. And so that was a big sign. You saw him kind of be chipping with a 5 foot. I think it was on six. I mean, those are the signs that I know he's being creative and he's playing instead of thinking, what am I supposed to do? It's like, what do I know that I can do?
Rick, I'm curious, how did your own journey in this game inform your coaching? Because word on the street is when you were younger, you could run a little hot.
More than a little hot. That's nice. Thank you. Unfortunately, it's one of those things. Golf's a challenging game, and I did not know how to deal with some of the ups and downs. And unfortunately, yeah, I had a temper, and that really stopped me, I think, from growing as a player. I, you know, as an average Division I golfer, but I didn't understand that emotions affect our focus, and focus affects our decision making and our confidence, and so on and so forth. So that's really what got me down this road of, wait, there's more than just this perfect golf swing. It's kind of the state you're in when you perform. And when I was younger, I did not have that mastery over my emotions, to say the least. So it's been one of my quests to try to find those tools and techniques to help people. You know, I'm not saying be positive all the time, but how do you regulate that when things are not going well?
I'm fascinated by this idea. You have the two most important acronyms if you're going to work with a PGA Tour player, PGA and PhD. You're a PGA club pro, of course, you're a teacher, but you also have a PhD. How do you meld those two sciences?
I think that's a great question, because I think even lately in the last year, I've been trying to come from working with Colin with both lenses, and sometimes they can cloud each other. And I think he wanted a lot more of the PGA swing instructor, and I wanted to kind of battle back with the mental side of the game. So when you have those combinations of that, it's like, which one am I going to utilize right now? I usually start with the mental side first, is what state is somebody in, where's their focus, their attention, and then we get in more to the skill development. So it is a blending, and each player is going to be a little different where I highlight my coaching.
Rick, in a very strange coincidence, my son's tennis coach sent me a video of you on Sunday from years ago talking about how Colin Morikawa never won an AJGA event, that he wasn't some youth golf dominator. Why is that important, not necessarily being the best 12-year-old or 14-year-old?
Yeah, I think we're seeing more and more pressure put on these younger junior golfers. I work with some of the best in the country, and unfortunately, they're specializing earlier. The expectations that they should be a certain spot at a certain age is, unfortunately, it gets in the way of their development. Now, Colin was an excellent junior golfer, don't get me wrong, but a lot of people think that, oh, you've got to win a AJGA to be on the map. Yes, he had a second place, he had a third place, but I think if we just mix in, it's like, oh, what's the outcome? I always looked at how can he get better 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now is the development of the player. And if we just look at what I think I'm supposed to do, I think it gets in the way is he a better player? Can he hit more shots? And I think those junior golfers out there and those parents need to have more realistic expectations with your 15 and 16 year olds.
Now, we talked about this yesterday. Colin had a 20-minute wait from the time he hit the tee shot on 18 on Sunday to the time he actually hit his second shot into that green. Couple of things. In that 20 minutes, you have a lot of time to think. What did you see in his body language? And then finally, how he executed that final shot?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, me at home watching it on TV, I could obviously know that the group ahead was not done just when, like, Jake Knapp finished up. There was obviously some stuff happening on the beach that I don't think he saw. I think he thought he was going to get ready to hit a shot, so they do their numbers, they pull the club, and I'm like, no, no, put that club back in there. But obviously he realized, nope, he's not up yet. So once he realized that he wasn't going to hit, he did a great job of, I think, resetting, getting away from the bag, walking, keeping the body warm. And then as you see him pace out there and look out into, you know, the beautiful ocean, is that he's kind of resetting that system. So you're not in your head thinking about golf. You now can actually go, okay, wow, how beautiful is this? And that can, I think, take some of the pressure off. And then he did a great job now resetting when he came back to the bag to now go through your numbers, go through your routine, commit to your shot, look at the wind, on all those type of things. So really proud of how he dealt with that situation.
And Rick, as you know, and as we all saw, the big hug with Kat on 18 and the announcement with Amanda Baliones that the couple is expecting their first child. You want to talk about an emotional moment for them. From your perspective as a coach, I mean, to have something else to play for besides yourself, to have a growing family, you know, what are the mental aspects of that in a really, I imagine it would be a positive outcome for Colin?
Definitely. I mean, we know, you know, our perception is our kind of our reality. So we have a different perspective on something. We look at things differently. And I think just knowing that he's going to be a father, he's going to look at golf differently and what he does. You know, being someone who has three wonderful children, I look through a different lens. And I think that can put things in perspective. Yes, he wants to be the best player in the world. And he wants to win. But he has a wonderful wife and he's going to have a family and all these other things, I think, helps balance out the stresses that these players go through.
Now, Colin talked on Sunday after the victory about some heart-to-heart talks you guys had last week going into that first round. What was the conversation like either on Sunday night or Monday after the victory?
Well, it's funny. We've been texting back and forth. I just gave him a big hug here a few minutes ago. I think it's one of those just – I always want him to celebrate the wins. And I think early on, it was more of like, well, you check the box off. It's time to go to get another one. And I was just so happy to see how much joy he had and him and Kat could be able to share that. It was very, very important for me to see that because, as we know, we don't never know when the next one's going to happen. And so I love seeing that. And I think it was just more of that Colin that I know inside showed up when it matters most. So just so proud.
Well, before we let you go, we all wish we could hit cuts like Colin Morikawa. But if you're a 20 handicap watching, if there's one thing they should do to help bring down their handicap from a mental game standpoint, whether it's breathing, pre-shot routine, what's one piece of advice to help the viewer at home get just a little bit better on this Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things. One is play your pattern. I mean, a lot of golfers they slice the ball and they think magically they're not going to slice it when they get on the golf course. And so I think you play your pattern and set up for in your pre-shot routine. Yes, we want to have a clear target. We want to have the breath work. But I don't think enough people play their averages out there, and I think they push it a little bit too much. You know, be like Colin, swing in great tempo and balance and hit the center of the face.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Rick, and again, congratulations. Great week for you and Colin.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, as we go to break, another look at the hardware Colin Morikawa collected over the weekend. No fumble this time. The lid stayed on compared to the Wanamaker mishap just up the road in San Francisco. Signature win in part to his work with coach Rick Sessingham.
It's amazing in a sense if I've played three really good rounds these weeks, and one of my skills and why I feel like I've been able to be on a lot of leaderboards recently is getting in a round when I haven't had my best off, and a frustrating start to both of the last couple weeks, but I think these are some of the weeks when you look back, you know, I'm very proud of sticking with it, not giving up. Even when I felt like things were going against me this week, you know, I just kept fighting, kept trying to hit shots, kept trying to execute. Teddy did a really good job of keeping me in it. Just proud of how I fought all week.
Get hyped, get excited. Scotty Scheffler headlines the field at this week's Genesis Invitational. And a reminder, you can catch live first round coverage this Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Time now, though, for another Golf Today Roundtable. Let's welcome in GolfChannel.com senior writer Ryan Lavner. Great to see you, buddy. We just spoke to Rick Sessinghaus, Colin Morikawa's longtime coach. How dangerous is Colin, expectant father, winner again? Is he the guy to break up the Scotty Rory party?
I don't know about that, but I do think that he is a dangerous player in the major championships because he's proven it over the 5-6 years that he's been on the PGA Tour. He's excelled in each and every major championship in which he has played throughout the course of his career. And I think it all comes down to, guys, his iron play. You look at what is the single most important attribute of today's best players and sort of equating that to future success. It's iron play. It's why Scottie Scheffler is peerless right now. It's why Jordan Spieth, a decade ago, was one of the best iron players in the PGA Tour. That is why he was winning major championships at that time. Will Zalatoris, when he burst onto the scene, he was one of the best iron players in the PGA Tour. Justin Thomas, one of the best iron players on the PGA Tour. There is a direct line from great iron play to PGA Tour success and major championship success. Colin Morikawa is proof of that formula as well. If he's going to gain 6 shots with his approach as he did on Saturday at Pebble Beach, yeah, this guy's going to be a serious threat each and every time he tees it up.
Now, Lav, Tiger Woods is scheduled to meet with the media at Riviera in about an hour right now. We only get a couple of chances to ask him questions in a media setting now. Once or twice a year is about the max. If I hand you the microphone first, what are you asking?
Well, Rex, you know that I tend to hog the microphone, so I would have a bunch of questions for Tiger Woods. You could ask him, are you going to be ready for the Masters? Do you believe that the Players' Championship is worthy of major championship status? What's going on with the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy? I would expect Tiger Woods to be asked all of those things. One unanswered question that I have as it relates to Tiger's role as the head with this future competitions committee is how would a less is more model actually work as it relates to the PGA Tour business? How does it work financially with partners and sponsors? How does it work practically with the condensed nature of the PGA Tour product and incorporating weeks off for the world's best players? And I think, how does it work theoretically when golf fans, Rex, seem to be clamoring for more golf, not less golf? And so how do you square that with the overall business and also creating opportunities and appealing to fans who actually want to see these guys in action more, not less?
Speaking of the schedule, you were in Phoenix where I was. You were running from the entrance to 16. I was hitting a couple of shots at 16, one really bad, one right at the flag. But you saw the energy there. And now the discussion that potentially the WM kicks off the PGA Tour schedule. You saw the fans. You heard the noise. Your thoughts on that potentiality?
Yeah, I love it. I've never quite understood why the PGA Tour, A, would go up against the NFL playoffs and sort of the conclusion of what is America's most popular sport, but also why you would sort of ease into the season as opposed to starting with a bang. My wife just went to the Daytona 500. That's the first event on the NASCAR schedule. It's the biggest. It's the best. It's a spectacle. I think you could equate that to the WM Phoenix Open. It's the biggest. I don't know if it's the best, but it's certainly a spectacle, as you and I proved. And I had an opportunity to listen to Lee Smith, the executive director The Players' Championship last week at Media Day for the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. And he outlined three different things. One is, as you mentioned, start the season bigger. Come out with a bang instead of a whimper. Go to some of the biggest markets on the PGA Tour. We don't have PGA Tour events in Denver, Chicago, New York, Boston, Philly, D.C., just to name a few. That certainly seems like a miss. And also, guys, owning the summer. And I think that's going to be particularly important this week, last week at Pebble Beach as well. If you were crafting a PGA Tour schedule, you would actually probably do the inverse of what we have right now. For if you believe, as I do, that the Pebble Riviera stretch is the best on the PGA Tour schedule, why do you have it in February? Why do you not have it in the summer, in July, in August? Build momentum throughout the year and then end with your best stretch on the PGA Tour.
I'm going to stick with the schedule on this one, Lab. When the PGA Tour, and you mentioned the tournament director at the Players Championship, and I guess Tiger Woods is probably going to talk about it this afternoon. When they talk about, quote unquote, owning the summer, what do you think that looks like?
I think that means flipping what we're doing now. If you were sort of zooming out on what the PGA Tour schedule is, you would argue that it's the West Coast swing is the best part of the PGA Tour schedule. That seems like a miss before we even get to the Players' Championship, before we get to the four major championships. What is the soft spot in the schedule? The soft spot in the schedule exists after the U.S. Open and leading in to the Open Championship. This might be a broader conversation. This might have to work in better concert with, I think most importantly, the Open Championship, of creating some more time. But how do you address sort of the soft spot in the schedule? Really, the main drama is, are these guys going to keep their cards? Are they going to be qualifying for the playoffs? Are they going to be making a push for the top 50 or the top 30? That's a pretty tough sell for anyone outside of the hardcore golf fans. And so if you were starting this thing from scratch, if you were whiteboarding this of what would be the best PGA Tour schedule, you would put the best events in the summer, when I think when you zoom out for the overall sports landscape, it's actually pretty bleak at that time.
You know, one aspect of this new PGA Tour has been listening to the fans, the fan forward initiative, as it were. When you look at 2026 so far in terms of the storylines, the winners, yes, Scotty, Colin, Goddard, et cetera, Justin Rose, but also the news-making with Brooks coming back, Patrick Reed eventually. How would you grade the tour from a cut-through-the-noise start to 2026? Should Brian Rolapp and company be pleased?
I think so. I think you look at the quality of the winners, the drama that's played out on Sunday. Obviously, we just mentioned the venues. These are some of the best events on the PGA Tour schedule. I think that's gone off without a hitch. You talk about the fan forward survey and what the fans have told the PGA Tour that they want. One of those things is they want reunification, or at least as close as they could possibly get to reunification in this fractured landscape. Bringing Brooks Koepka back through this returning member program, outlining a pathway back for a player like Patrick Reed, who's tearing it up on the DP World Tour, I think was a positive as well. One other aspect I think went underreported with the fan forward survey is that they actually want tougher venues. They want these the best players in the world to be tested and not necessarily have some of these birdie barrages and the shootouts that we've typically seen when the conditions are as favorable. Yes, the American Express is going to always yield a lot of birdies. Yes, Pebble Beach with the Pro-Am format, trying to keep it so it's not 6.5-hour runs. I get that you're going to get birdies as well. With the soft conditions this week at Riviera, scoring might be a little bit better as well. But I think when you look at the setup, guys, and the golf course, rough has been one of the predominant factors at each and every event that they have played so far. I like that trend for the PGA Tour, at least trying to put the screws to these guys a little bit.
I love that concept because Jim McLean tweeted on Sunday saying that maybe Pebble Beach is not up for the test. Maybe it's not up to the PGA Tour test anymore. What do you think?
I think it's up to the test as long as it's maximized. And I think it's going to be maximized when you get into the summer. And I know the June gloom and the coldest summer I ever had was in Monterey. Like, I get all of that. You might not necessarily get conditions that are perfectly conducive for firm and fast and how Pebble Beach is supposed to be played. I think there's a couple of factors here. I would not have it in February. That's one of the worst weather months that you can possibly have. But I think, guys, the Pro-Am factor needs to be talked about as well. You are trying to make sure that the Pro-Am participants have a good experience over those first 36 holes. You cannot absolutely push this golf course to the brink, because you won't be able to finish, because it's not going to be any fun for that aspect as well, for what is still big business on the PGA Tour. So I still think there's a place for Pebble Beach. It's going to be pushed to U.S. Open conditions next year in 2027 with the U.S. Open. As a PGA Tour venue, absolutely it works. It just needs to be showcased a little bit better. I think that's in the summer.
I have done some reporting on this, Lav, and I just need you to confirm that over your right shoulder is something you got from Players Media Day last week for winning the media event, or did you just steal it? Which one is it? I think I've heard this both ways.
I did not steal it. Let's not say that I've committed a felony here. Yes, this is a golden typewriter. It goes to the winning team at the media day for the Players Championship. I did not win. I had the driver yips. I've had the driver yips for a year or two. I play with influencer Roger Steele. We came nowhere close to winning the tournament. However, I have been told by very good sources at PGA Tour HQ that they're going to be giving a new media gift. And so it was generously given to me at the conclusion of the 2026 media gift with promises of better gifts in future years.
That's not what I heard from my sources.
I love a golden typewriter.
And when bullied them, yes.
I'm sure you did. And the next time you use that typewriter, it is the coldest winter I ever spent was the summer in San Francisco. That's the line you were looking
for. So close.
All right.
So close.
Thanks for joining us,
buddy.
That's why
I bullied the typewriter. I couldn't actually win it myself.
If you're in the market for a podcast and exchanges just like that, check out the Golf Channel podcast with Ryan Lavner and myself. And if you miss any of Golf Today, you can find our best interviews on the Golf Today podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. Now, we're just about 30 minutes away from Genesis Invitational Tournament host Tiger Woods stepping up to the microphone in Los Angeles. We've got it all covered for you over the next hour as Golf Today rolls on.
Golf Today.
Hello and welcome, Rex Hoggard, Damon Hack. Now, Damon, it's been about 2.5 months since Tiger Woods stepped to a microphone and spoke with the media in the Bahamas. That was in December at the Hero World Challenge. It's always a potpourri when it comes to these press conferences. You don't know what's going to be asked. What are your expectations of maybe the questions he's going to have to answer?
Yeah, I feel like Tiger is kind of entering the Yoda stage of his career and life. And I think he'll be asked a lot about kind of how he envisions the PGA Tour from a structural standpoint, competitively, since he's the head of the future competition committee on the PGA Tour. I'm sure there'll be some questions about the state of his health and body, because that's how we'll always identify Tiger, as a player and a great champion first and foremost. But I think his reach now, his breadth, is beyond what's going on inside the ropes. It's also the state of the political scene on the PGA Tour as well.
I apologize for this. Do or don't do. The schedule, the PGA Tour schedule. Yeah, that was a really bad one. I apologize for that in advance. I will go back to the schedule in the future competitions committee, because I find Tiger being on this committee is such a unique opportunity. I think every player is going to look at what's happening with a very critical eye, because it's going to impact everyone. It's going to impact your job. However, when it comes to Tiger Woods, I think everyone has a level of trust that goes beyond any other player or any other executive or any other official that could be on that committee, because you know he's going to create the best possible schedule. And this is always the example I keep coming back to. One of the variations I was told is the PGA Tour is looking into maybe taking the week off after a major championship and the Players' Championship, because that's what the top players like to do. But I was recently told that now they're thinking about maybe switching that to the week before. This has everything to do with what's best for the PGA Tour and the players. So I think there's a level of trust there.
I think so. And there's just a lot of information and a lot of knowledge that Tiger has gathered throughout his career, not just as a great player, but someone who's been in boardrooms and picked the brains of Michael Phelps and Michael Jordan and knows what fans are interested in and knows what competitive greatness looks like, knows what drama and compelling sports television looks like. So hopefully there's an aspect of his playing days that he can bring to bear as he tries to put his paw prints on what the future of the PGA Tour will look like.
And there is an energy and a tirelessness that Tiger Woods have. When you talk to people in his universe, I remember having these conversations with Davis Love about getting text messages about pairings for the Ryder Cup at 3 o'clock in the morning. He is now applying that energy, that expertise to the PGA Tour. So I will say it is in good hands. We don't know exactly what's going
to
happen.
He's involved, he cares, and he's an asset to the PGA Tour.
And I think today is going to be really interesting. All right. The Genesis Invitational returns to Riviera Country Club this week after a year-long hiatus. The last time this championship was contested here in 2024, it was Hideki Matsuyama, who shot an incredible final round 62, coming from six shots back to take the title. You take a look at some recent winners. Ludvig Åberg, that was last year, of course, at Torrey Pines. Hideki in 2024. We showed the highlight from Jon Rahm in 23. And I was there in 21 when Max won. It was really cool.
This is a special story and a lot of attention, of course, on the tournament host Tiger Woods. Not teeing it up this week in Southern California, but he is hosting. He's involved. We're getting closer to the bottom of the hour where he'll meet the media at Riviera Country Club. Amazingly, 16 starts at the Genesis without a win for the Big Cat, but very successful in his native state. Look at the U.S. Open wins, the Farmers Insurance Open, WGCs as well, and of course, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Century back in 97 when he beat Tom Lehman in a playoff. Let's welcome back Todd Lewis now from Riviera. What do you expect to hear from the 15-time major champ today?
Yeah, there's going to be a variety of topics that Tiger Woods will likely address. First off, his foundation, the TGR Foundation, and the millions and millions of dollars that they have raised to help impact kids, over 200,000, that will likely be addressed. I expect to hear something from Genesis and their commitment to this tournament, and the funds raised in this tournament does benefit the TGR Foundation. But there will be a lot of other meaty topics to talk about with Tiger, including his health. Where is he in his rehab right now, coming off that lumbar disc replacement surgery, his seventh back surgery? I understand he has been chipping and putting. Has he moved on to swinging the club? Can he hit a driver full force right now? And where will he play? Is Augusta National on the table? Is that a possibility that he will tee it up at the Masters? If not, does he have some type of reference as to when he will likely return to competition? And will it be on the PGA Tour Champions as well? So that's going to be discussed here. He's going to be asked about. The Ryder Cup. You know, he wasn't the Ryder Cup captain at Bethpage because he had a lot on his plate. Does he have a little more freedom in his schedule to represent the United States as the team goes to Ireland and try to win on foreign soil for the first time since 1993? I'm thinking that will be asked. But, of course, the biggest subject right now is what you guys were talking about, is what is the PGA Tour schedule going to look like as soon as possibly 2027? He is on the Futures Competition Committee. That committee has been meeting a lot. I understand they have whittled down a few models now. It's starting to come into focus a little more. I'm hearing that the West Coast, maybe Riviera, maybe Torrey Pines, maybe Pebble Beach, will likely be a spot for a playoff event. So how is this coming into focus? Are we going to get an update as to maybe when that schedule is going to be put out? So Tiger is probably, outside of Brian Rolapp, is the biggest influence in what's happening, in my opinion, on the PGA Tour and this schedule. He is very, very committed to making sure that the PGA Tour has a really strong project moving forward, and he is heavily involved in the governance. As a matter of fact, you remember Brooks Koepka coming back. He called Tiger Woods first. He didn't call Brian Rolapp. He called Tiger, and Tiger helped forge that pathway back for Brooks Koepka to the PGA Tour. So there's a lot of meat on this bone today that Tiger Woods is going to talk about, and a lot of answers I think we're going to get. It's going to be a very impactful press conference.
Tiger, Todd, I want to stick with the schedule. You talked a little bit about this yesterday, about owning the summer. That seems to be where the PGA Tour is going. I'm sure you're going to be interested. I'm going to be interested. But what are the players saying as far as the expectations for today and what they may learn about the schedule you pointed out next year maybe?
Well, they're hearing what we're hearing, Rex. You want to call them rumors or storylines that haven't been formally introduced yet. But I think a lot of players are interested in how many tournaments that are going to stack up and make a PGA Tour schedule. I talked to Adam Scott, who is on the Future Competition Committee as well. I mean, 20 to 25 events, are the players committed to playing all of them? Because that's a big schedule. Then you add on the major championship. And I say that because you got to find these title sponsors that want to put up a lot of money to host or sponsor one of these PGA Tour events. And if you're searching for someone that's going to spend all that money, they want to have a really strong field. They want to have a guarantee in some ways that Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, they're going to be there playing at their tournament. So there's a lot of tentacles to make this come together that the PGA Tour has to figure out, and the players as well. But, you know, that I haven't really talked to anybody that's complete, well, at least here in this field, because this is not a middle-class field here. These are elite players. I haven't talked to anybody in this field that is really kind of upset about the direction that the PGA Tour is going with their schedule. But, of course, they don't have a formal schedule as well. So we'll see what happens.
Thank you very much, Todd. It should be an eventful press conference.
All right, stick around for more Golf Today. We're sticking with the Tiger theme today and turning our attention to his impact off the golf course with the TGR Foundation. We'll be joined by Alma Gutierrez, an alum and success story from this important organization. We're back on Golf Today. In 1996, the TGR Foundation was established by Tiger and Earl Woods as a nonprofit organization focused on empowering students through education. The foundation impacts thousands of students annually through its TGR Learning Labs and national programs. Tiger has made motivation a key aspect, helping kids across the country, and his parents were an early influence.
I was just getting started in golf. I was just getting started in the foundation. I was just getting started in life. Mm-hmm. And Dad always provided an environment that he was very proud of what I did. And Mom as well, whatever successes I had, whatever failures I had, I always had two proud parents. And that drove me to do something or some things that probably, that I failed in a lot of different regards. But I always came home to, I've said this so many times, I always came home to a home of love. And so that allowed me to be able to go out a little bit further.
Gosh. Wonderful moments, pictures, Tiger Woods TGR Foundation celebrating 30 years this year. Foundation that helped a young Alma Gutierrez, and now she is paying it forward for the next generation. And Alma Gutierrez joins us now. It's wonderful to spend some time with you. TGR Learning Lab has been such a huge part of your life. I want to go all the way back to the beginning, because I understand from the first time you walked through those doors, you were struck, you were impacted. Why?
To be honest, from the second I stepped foot at the TGR Learning Lab in Anaheim, I just felt like it was such a safe space. And I just really loved just the way the building looked, the staff, like just the interactions.
This has become such an institution in Anaheim. You've been there for so long. How has the program evolved?
Oh, wow. Yeah, the program has definitely evolved. I know when I started, you know, the Irwood Scholar Program was something new, because when I was here, it was only like the day program and the after school program. And now we have like professional learning for teachers. And then we have just all this different type of curriculum as well that we shared during the pandemic. So I've just seen a lot of growth, and even just from going from one TGR Learning Lab to like multiple. So now we have one in Philadelphia. That was something I honestly would have never thought. So I'd love to see that growth.
For parents who are watching, I'm curious why the program was so impactful to you. What did you learn? What skills, you know, kind of carried you from young adulthood into adulthood?
To be honest, I feel like I'm first generation. So in my household, there was no one who went to college or talked about college. And also in my high school, I felt like unless you had like a 4.1 GPA, they wouldn't talk to you about going to a four-year university. I was always kind of just given the spiel of, oh, you're going to go to community college and best of luck. And so when I came to the TGR Learning Lab, I felt like college access was something I deeply appreciated, but also having role models, having people who knew your name, who actually were interested about helping like foster that passion. You have that spark inside of you. And I think that is what's super meaningful, especially for a lot of our youth now that maybe sometimes feel misunderstood or misheard. Like coming here and having instructors who are really patient, I feel like that was something I really appreciated.
Having come up through the program, what made you want to get more involved after college?
So I actually got hired when I was a senior in high school, and I was working here for undergrad. I went to Cal State Fullerton, just down the street from here. And when I graduated from college, you know, a position opened up within the Orwood Scholar Program. I did not think I was going to get it. I applied, and it's just to see that transition from program coordinator to director now, it's just incredible.
I'm curious, the word is that you went to the same high school as Tiger Woods. Western, is there like a statue of the man, golf clubs hanging around in the hallways? What should we know about that link, that tie that both of you share?
Oh my goodness. So I actually went to his junior high as well. So everyone would talk about Tiger in our office. There was like a big picture of Tiger and just different trophies he had from his time at Western. But I think what, you know, to be honest, I didn't know much about golf, but what stood out to me was that Tiger actually donated equipment to us and our golf polos and just different stuff. So when I was thinking of a sport to join, you know, golf was basically free at my high school because of Tiger. And so then I kind of clicked two and two. I'm like, wow, Tiger, he's an amazing person. And he's more than an athlete.
As someone who came up through the program, what's your connection with the students now? Can you see yourself in the students that come through the program now?
Yes. So I am a director for the Orwood Scholar Program. So my students are first gen. They're going to schools from UCLA to Stanford to Rice to NYU to Howard. And I just really love being there for them, listening to them, and just being able to give them that advice. If a student is kind of maybe, let's say they get their first F on a test, it's like, okay, let's like think about maybe going to like the tutoring center and let me help you with that resource. Or if maybe they're looking for an internship, it's like, let's go to the career center. So just being able to kind of give them that guidance is honestly what makes, like, it's not even a job. Like, I love being here all the time.
I'm curious how TGR Foundation has really changed the trajectory of your family history at all. Have you noticed those ripples, your family, your personal journey kind of flowering to other aspects of your family and people looking to you as kind of a beacon, as an inspiration?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, like in my high school, the norm was just to go to community college and then people would just drop out from community college and get a full-time job, which there's nothing wrong with that. And that was kind of the story of my family. I'm the youngest of four. And so all my siblings kind of went through that community college pathway, but then they dropped out at some point. So I was the first in my household, the youngest, to graduate from college. And my siblings were like, there's no way the little one's going to like be us. So they actually all ended up transferring to a four-year university and graduating. So four out of four kids have gone to college. And I think I give that thanks to the TGR Foundation, because if it wasn't for them investing in me and showing me about college access, I wouldn't have showed that to my siblings.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show and for your amazing work with the foundation.
Thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing Tuesday.
Alma Gutierrez changing lives and paying it forward, just as she was helped as a youngster in Anaheim, California. Tiger Woods' TGR Foundation celebrating 30 years this year.
Welcome back to Golf Today. This week, the PGA Tour returns to Riviera Country Club for the Genesis Invitational. Live first round coverage comes your way this Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Now, Damon, let's jump in the Wayback Machine. All the way back in 1992, a 16-year-old Tiger Woods made his first start in a PGA Tour event at the LA Open. Finished 17 shots behind 36-hole leader Davis Love III. Woods realized that maybe he needed to get a little bit more seasoning before he turned pro, and finally turned pro 4.5 years later. Now, Damon, he hasn't won here. We brought that up. It's still baffling to me that somehow Tiger Woods has never won in as many starts as he's had at Riviera, and yet he's so closely tied to this golf course.
Yeah, he is, and he hasn't won there, as you mentioned, but this is still a place that means so much to him, and he continues to give back to his TGR Foundation, not to mention the Charlie Sifford exemption annually, which helps a minority player get better footing in this game.
And I think when you look at what he's not only accomplished in the game, but really in LA, we just got through talking about the Learning Center. It's so special. And I believe he stepped into the media center, and we have Tiger Woods at the microphone.
All right, welcome everybody to the 2026 Genesis Invitational. We're joined here in the interview room by tournament host Tiger Woods. Tiger, it seems like we've done this several times through the years, but kind of feels a little different this year. As tournament host, what does it mean to you and the event to be back celebrating the 100th playing of the event?
Yeah, playing the 100th championship here is pretty amazing. For me, as a SoCal kid who grew up coming here, coming to this event, LA Open, coming here to RIV, it's an iconic sight. And then to see have major championships here, you've had, you know, our event here, and for a 16-year-old kid to be able to start here and then now host his own tournament at the same golf course is pretty special.
2026 is a year full of milestones on and off the course. 30 years since you turned pro, your foundation celebrating its 30th anniversary, and the original Learning Lab in Anaheim celebrated its 20th anniversary. You've talked about the great legacy being off the golf course for you. What do these milestones mean to you and the future of the TGI Foundation?
Yeah, our first Learning Lab opened up 20 years ago here in Anaheim. To go from that to now expansion at Lulu's Place here as well as in Southern California, and then we just opened up a facility in Copps Creek in Philadelphia last year. Now we're going to Atlanta and Augusta, Georgia. So we're expanding quickly, and we're serving the underserved, and I think that's the more important thing, is that, yes, golf has been a big piece of my life, but it's not the only part of my life. The educational side and the opportunities that that Stanford has provided me, and the people that I've been able to meet there, and that if I didn't work on my grades and didn't work on my education side of it, and then I wouldn't have had that opportunity to go to such a great university. So a lot of these kids that we're serving are first gens. They don't really have an opportunity that they deserve, and it's up to us to be able to facilitate that and give them what they truly deserve is an opportunity and be supported. And that's what the TGR Foundation has done for 30 years and will continue to do so.
We want to recognize another milestone here in the room with us today. We know you go a long way back with this person. Yesterday, he celebrated 50 years on air in Los Angeles, talking about sports and all sorts of stories. We're pleased to recognize Mr. Jim Hill. And Jim would like to honor you with the first question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Tiger, good to see you.
You too, Jim.
Congratulations and everything, and welcome back home. And I'm wondering, how do you feel after these years, knowing that people admire, respect you, and you have so much influence, not only in the game of golf, but in sports in general?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a great career, I think, of 30 years. I've played out here. I've been able to chase my dream, which is playing the PGA Tour, winning golf tournaments, winning major championships. And I've met a lot of people along the way, a lot of sportsmen, a lot of great people all around the world. And I would never have met any of those people. I've had relationships with any of them if it wasn't for the game of golf. And so, probably where it all started was with your interview.
Yeah. But talk just a little bit about Pops.
Yeah.
How he's got you on the right road.
Yeah, I mean, Dad was unbelievable. He was not only my dad, he was my best friend. Yeah. He was a lot of different things, and we had an amazing relationship of, you know, I used to, you know this, going to the Navy golf course where we did our interview, going out there and sneaking on the golf course, be able to play golf with Dad and play in the dark. That was great times. And he was the one that really provided the support and drive for me and the confidence that he instilled in me that I could chase after my dream, which is playing golf.
And it also keeps you grounded.
Oh, he definitely kept me grounded. We gave each other a lot of grief. It was great banter back and forth. Competitive. He always made everything fun. That was the thing. Dad was always, whatever we did, it was always competitive. One, it was always competitive. And two, it was always fun. And because it was fun, we loved to compete. And we did everything together.
Thank you.
Okay, just let everybody know we have a limited time for questions. If you can raise your hand, we'll get a microphone to you with Greg or Damien, and we'll start over on this side, please.
Tiger, Taylor Schaub, Spectrum News. Yeah. This golf course shares the same zip code as hundreds, if not thousands, of homes that were burned in the Pacific Palisades. Yeah. To honor that community 1 year later, what does that mean to you?
Last year was just a horrific and terrible time for this entire community. What was going on just north of here, that fire was almost out, and then it just spread and just ripped through here. And the whole community was devastated. But at the same time, the whole community rallied around our event, and we were able to go to San Diego, hold it at Torrey Pines. But for us to be able to come back here 1 year later and hopefully help repair this community, it was just a devastating thing. That people lost their lives, lost homes, lost valuables that they will never, ever be able to replace. And so hopefully we can make a positive impact this week.
Go to Dan and then next to Doug.
Over here.
Back in the left. It's hard to see, guys.
There you go.
Yeah. Knowing you had a bit of a relationship with Anthony Kim back in the day, what did you make of his comeback, and can you speak to the level of natural ability that he has?
Yeah, Dan, I mean, this kid hit it so good. He was on an unbelievable run when he won at Charlotte, and we played against each other at the Congressional. He played unbelievable at the 2008 Ryder Cup. He had so much natural talent. He could hit any shot he wanted. And then to see him, you know, struggle in life and didn't really want to play golf, didn't want to be part of golf. And then for him to come all the way back and for him to win and to be as devoted as he is to his family, it's a story in which you just have to wrap your heart around it. Because of the struggles. I mean, we all can relate to struggles. We all struggle in life, and the longer it goes, the more times you've had tough times. But for him to fight through it, and for Anthony to get to where he's gotten to from the low that he was in is something that, as I said, you have to just wrap your heart around it.
We'll go to Doug next, and then Adam.
Tiger, on a balance of work and play meaning mm-hmm. whatever you've got going health-wise, and work meaning the boardroom, what do you find to be the greater challenge for you right now, and can you give us any kind of an update on where things are looking schedule-wise?
Okay, what part of the schedule?
27.
Okay, got it. Okay, I understand.
Not yours.
I got you, Doug. It's been quite a bit of a challenge on both sides, from the physical golf side of it for me, from trying to do the right thing for all of our membership, our partners, and everyone who's associated with the PGA Tour, and trying to do that and trying to make our product even better going forward, giving the challenges we have to face. I thought I spent a lot of hours practicing in my prime. It's done in compared to what we've done in the boardroom. It's been challenging. We're trying to do the right thing. We're making some great strides. The player directors have been unbelievable with their time and the focus and the depth of knowledge and perspective. And then we've had unbelievable board members that come from all walks of life that are wanting to make our tour better and wanting to make our product better. The schedule was different. Okay, so we played, I think it was La Costa at the time, right, as the tournament champions, and then ended sometimes after Halloween. And so that's a 10-month span of golf, and that was all part of the PGA Tour. And there was, at that time, November, December, I think it was considered the silly season. And so it was just a different landscape. We played on the tour for 10 months, had an opportunity to play some fun events, some different type of formatted events in November, December. Or some of the players, like myself, would go down to Australia or South Africa and play on their tour. So it was just a different landscape than it is now.
Okay, we'll go to Adam on the left here and then to Jeff in the back.
Tiger, along those lines, how can you explain to me how less is going to be more for the PGA Tour?
Yeah, well, we're going to get more top players playing. We're going to make it more competitive by having fewer cards. So that in itself is going to make it more competitive just to be out here. Having Brooks come back, having Patrick Reed
play as well as he is and committed to coming back to the tour. Having Scotty as dominant as he has been and to have Rory, you know, complete the career Grand Slam, you have a lot of top players, but also you have a lot of youth that has come up during that time. And we're trying to create opportunities for that turnover coming from the PGA Tour U or it's the Korn Ferry and try and get more youth out here because eventually they're going to take over the game. And so trying to create that opportunity, trying to create the right competitive model and the environment to foster that, that's been the as what Doug asked, that's been the greater challenge of it all.
How close are you to coming back to playing on either the PGA or Champions Tour?
Well, I'm trying, put it that way.
Have you had any setbacks?
The disc replacement has been one thing. It's been a challenge. I've had a fuse back and now a disc replacement. So it's challenging. And now I entered a new decade. So that number is starting to sink in and has thinking about the opportunity to be able to play in a cart. So that's something that I won't do out here on this tour because I don't believe in it. But on the Champions Tour, that's certainly a certain opportunity.
Do you have a target yet?
I don't.
All right, let's take one from Jeff in the back there.
Tiger, we've seen you recently doing some captaining work for Jupiter Lynx. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that's given you a desire, an itch to be the Ryder Cup captain in 2027, if you've heard from the PGA of America and where that stands.
Good tie in there, Jeff. That was good.
Thought I'd
try.
That
was good. They have asked me for my input on it, and I haven't made my decision yet. I'm trying to figure out what we're trying to do with our tour. That's been driving me hours upon hours every day. And trying to figure out if I can actually do our team, our Team USA, and our players and everyone that's going to be involved in the Ryder Cup, if I can do it justice with my time. I'm serving on two boards and what I'm doing for the PGA Tour. I'm trying to figure out if I can actually do this and serve the people that are involved and serve them at an honorable level.
Okay, we'll take one from Bob right here on the left.
Tiger. If I could just go back to the physical stuff again, mm-hmm. compared to all the other things you've been through, what's the challenge with the disc replacement? And is it fair to say that the Achilles is not an issue anymore? Are you far enough beyond that to where that would be holding you back?
Yeah, the Achilles is not an issue. I can't dunk a basketball anymore, so that's don't have to worry about that. As far as the disc replacement, it's just sore, and it takes time. Willie Z went through it, and it took him a while to come back, and I'm a little bit older than Willie Z, so it's probably going to take me a little bit longer. My body's been through a lot, and so it's just one of those things where it's each and every day I keep trying, I keep progressing, I keep working on it, and try and kind of get stronger, try and get more endurance in this body, and try and get it at a level in which I can play at the highest level again.
Are you able to hit full shots yet? Or
yeah.
And are you?
Yeah, I'm able to. Not well every day, but yeah. I can hit them.
What about just the quality of life part of this? Like, compared to the microdiscectomies, is this a better outcome than what you dealt with before?
Well, the micros were early, so that's when my back first had any kind of trauma to it. I've had many back surgeries since then, and so the quality of life, it was better back then because it was just new. It was my first operations. I've had many operations since then, so body's been through a little bit more.
Thanks. Go to Todd, right in the middle.
Hey, Tiger. I know you're juggling a lot of things in formulating the PGA Tour schedule, whether it's title sponsors or media partners. What do you see as the biggest challenge in trying to put this new schedule together?
Well, I think it's trying to serve literally everyone from the player side of it, from our media partners, from all of our title sponsors, from the local communities, or even changing venues and going to bigger markets. It's what do we need to do from a competitive model to
make our tour the best product it can possibly be each and every year and still have room for development. And how do we do all of that at the same time? And so that's been the challenging part because there's been a lot of moving parts over the last couple of years to try and get us into the position that we're in now with the FCC or its the boards being unified and linked together and working together. So it's been a lot of moving parts, but it's been in sync that we've had a lot of information thrown our way, which has been great. And everyone's working collaboratively together. And that's where I was hesitant that we were going to have, we're going to be in this position where we're going to work together like this and function at a level to make our product better. But everyone is. Everyone's trying to make the PGA Tour the best tour in the world, make it better than what it is now, make it as for the players so that they can come out here at a younger age, like an opportunity, like a 16-year-old kid here at Riviera in 1992 got an opportunity to play. Trying to give that opportunity and those opportunities to these players and the next generations or the generations to come.
Do you anticipate this new schedule happening in 2027?
We would like to have it happen in 2027. We may have to roll it out over a couple-year period. We may not be able to be implemented all of it in 2027, but there will definitely be parts of it integrated or changed then from what it is now in 26 into 27.
Final thing with you in regards to your recovery, is the Masters off the table for you?
No.
All right, time for just a few more before we wrap up. We'll go to Brentley right in the middle here.
Yeah, Tiger over here. Yes. Piggybacking off of Todd's question, many kind of wonder if the West Coast events are better served later in the year when it's better weather. Perhaps this event may be moving into a playoff spot. From your perspective, what would be the benefit of the Genesis being later, maybe in August, maybe a playoff event?
Well, I think that, one, you're going to get weather not like this. That's number one. We're going to have perfect days. I mean, it's always perfect in SoCal here in August. And so, yes, we're looking at things like that, looking to go to bigger markets later in the year for the playoffs, just trying to make our competitive model better. And how do we do that? And I think that is one of the options you mentioned with Genesis that certainly is on the table.
Okay, over here on the right, can't quite see who it is, but go ahead.
Hey, Tiger. This tournament always brings you back to your youth a little bit, as
it does.
You know, where you started. I've seen you mess around with some of your friends like Justin Thomas out here. I was wondering if you can remember the best golf roast or chirp that you ever heard on the course.
What's about
the best like golf roast or chirp that you've ever heard on the course?
The later you get in the day here on Friday and Saturday, you tend to hear a few things. Beverages served, things done, and so coming up 17, 18, I've heard a few things, and especially around 10 when you're teeing off and making the turn. I won't say my best golf roast, but I was the most shocked when I was probably out here when I was eight or nine, to hear some of the banter back and forth between the pros and the gallery. I'll tell you, it wasn't a roast, but I'm going to tell you a kind of a cool story. I came down, I was on number eight green. The old eight green was on more to the left. And this golf ball comes slamming in there. And I go running over to it, and it's a Ram golf ball. I'm like, oh, never heard of a Ram. What is Ram? I'm 8 years old, right? So I go running over there, and I'm just looking at it, and this caddy just pushes me out of the way. You know, kid, get out of the way. And I look up, and I don't know who he is at that time, and later find out it was Bruce Edwards caddying for Tom Watson. So I used to give him a lot of grief about that. He said, "Yeah, you were in the way." That's just part of the neat things for me. Part of being here at Riv is be able to go back in time, as you said, as a kid.
Real quick, Griff Pippen. Tiger, I want to know, do you have any tips on how to stay jacked in your 50s? Because I tried on some Sunday Red, and I did not look like you.
Well, that might because you probably don't do the same things I do in the gym.
Okay. Any one tip or workout you'd recommend?
Not one workout. It's being disciplined.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay. We'll take one final one from Jeff, and then we'll wrap it up. Jeff in the back.
Tiger, with Riviera celebrating 100 years, mm-hmm. just wondering if you could talk about some of the ways that this course has kind of stood the test of time and why it's been able to.
Well, I think the layout. Well, granted, they've moved some tees back. Like the 12th tee is nowhere near what it used to be. The eighth hole is nowhere what it used to be. Then they've moved a few things back here and there. But what has stood the test of time is that iconic first tee shot. That hasn't gone anywhere. We've always played in front of the clubhouse. It's very similar to me. It's similar to the first tee shot at St. Andrews. It's always been in the same spot. And so when you go back through the test of time, and you look at all the photos, and you go back 100 years, you're going to see the same tee shot right in front of the clubhouse. There's nowhere to go. And I think that the classicness of the golf course, the bunkering, the subtleness, the green complexes out here, how small they are, how subtle they are. And unfortunately, it's wet right now, but when it dries out here, this is one of the harder golf courses to post a score on.
All right, Tiger, we appreciate your time as always. I'll ask you to stay here, and we'll introduce tournament director, Mr. Mike Andolini, who's on his way up. Thank you, everybody.
Tiger Woods speaking for about 20 minutes at Riviera Country Club, saying he's able to hit full shots now. The Masters not off the table. Also saying he has been in contact with the PGA of America about the potential of being a Ryder Cup captain. Damon Hack, Rex Hoggard, back with you. Where do you want to go, big guy?
So many Easter eggs when you go through these. And it's normally the case with Tiger Woods. You have to read between the lines a little bit. But he was really forthright when I think it was Todd Lewis who asked him the question about what are you doing right now and hitting full shots and is the Masters out of the question. It was very quick. No.
How about the smile?
Yes, it was a very Tiger-esque smile. It's good to see that he's heading in that direction because when we spoke with him in the Bahamas about this, it didn't even seem to be on his radar. Yeah. It didn't seem like whatever he had gone through physically was going to allow him to do this. Now, the other half of the coin as well, I remember being in the Bahamas and someone asked him about being the next Ryder Cup captain, and I was absolutely stunned that the answer was, well, no one has reached out to me, and I was flummoxed. How is that even possible? You have to have his phone number. You have to send him his text. It seems to me, if we're reading those tea leaves, that he's still on the outside looking in. He still feels like he has so much to do with the PGA Tour. He can't commit himself to being a captain. And you and I both know he'd be such a good captain.
Oh, I think it'd be unbelievable, especially on the road. Ireland will be very difficult trying to win on the road for the first time since 1993. And as is the case with Tiger in this latest incarnation of his life, it's the balance of working on his game, being in boardrooms. He says in boardrooms now longer than he able to, even at the height of his power, practice on the game. But to hear him say that, yeah, the back is sore, accepting of the age that he is now, the odometer past 50, entering a new decade, as he says, the discectomy and kind of the fallout from that, but the Achilles no longer an issue. Yes, he's sore in the microdiscectomy and the fusion that he had and dealing with the soreness of getting up in age, but he's able to hit full shots now. And here we sit in February, and the fact that the Masters is not ruled out. Just that nugget, that acorn, that could change the entire way that the golf world ramps up its coverage before the first major championship of the year.
I would like to have some sort of live feed on what the Masters prices for tickets right now went to when Tiger Woods just alluded to the idea that, yeah, it's still on the table. I can imagine it spiked a lot on that one. I will say he mentioned Willie Z. That's, of course, Will Zalatoris. Sure. And in this particular case, Tiger Woods is always the standard when it comes to coming back from injury, about the idea that everything that he's been through, he's the benchmark. You look at how hard he has worked to really overcome so many different ailments. For him, it was probably seeing Willie Z just a few weeks ago, coming back from a very similar back surgery. I remember being here on the desk talking about how different Willie's swing is now and how much more he's actually taller now than he was before, how much more freely he is actually swinging the golf club. It's cool to think the Tiger's at home watching Willie Z going, yeah, I can do that, even at 50 years old.
And the fact that he still wants to do this, that he's still willing to put his body through the workouts, as the questioner asked him about how good he looks in the Sunday red outfits, the fact that he's still putting in the time to work on his body. And then the next question is going to be, you know, it used to be, well, when will you come back? Would it be at Augusta? Will he have a warm-up event, as it were, try to kind of kick the tires ahead of Augusta? Will he play at the Players for example, in March.
Will he play the players? Will he play the PGA Tour champions? I mean, you and I were talking about it just this morning. I'm amazed at how many people I hear that are associated with the PGA Tour champions, either officials or players who are anticipating that, yeah, he's probably going to play a handful of events if he's physically able to do it. You would think the majors would be on his radar. Maybe some of the other events. You look at Jim Furyk's event in North Florida. Clearly, they have a great relationship. That would be really cool as well. But you're right. It's that Masters Easter egg. I think it's got everyone interested, as well as his work on the Future Competitions Committee. He laid down some of the I wasn't expecting any specifics. I don't think they have any specifics. But when you know how many models of the future schedule they've been through, and he starts talking about, yes, I can see Riviera moving to a different time of year as a different tournament, maybe a playoff event.
Yeah, it sounds like the tour is taking a look at the schedule and saying this is a very unique opportunity with new leadership in Brian Rolapp. There's already been some big-time moves, and he talked about it, Tiger did, about Brooks Koepka coming back, Patrick Reed soon to be back, Scottie Scheffler, the best player in the world, Rory McIlroy having completed the career Grand Slam. Like, what an opportunity with eyeballs on the game to create more competitive tension. What does that look like, he said? Less events, smaller fields, fewer cards, more impactful events. And as Todd said, listen, this is a week where you're going to hear rah-rah, all for that. Sure. The larger field events, you're not going to hear necessarily a unison view on what the future PGA Tour may look like if it does mean fewer cards. But that means you get the best players in the world playing more often.
You think I'm going to get an earful next week at the Cognizant Classic?
No question. Yeah. You get a lot of different answers from the players in South Florida compared to Los Angeles.
Looking forward
week.
To doing those reports. And he also touched on the idea that let's boil this down to the basic cause right here. He said it's about balancing the desire to improve the model and the meritocracy. I think that's the tightrope they have to walk right now.
Yeah. How do you think Tiger is doing just juggling this new life at 50 with all of the questions he's being asked of, whether it's leadership questions, playing questions, being out there with Ernie Els and Jim Furyk and Fred Couples, his old buddies, being back perhaps at Augusta National for the first major of the year, and also potentially a Ryder Cup captain, not to mention shaping the future of the PGA Tour. This is someone we thought would be a recluse late in life. Instead, he is fully engaged in all of these various entities. He is juggling a lot of bowling pins right now.
I think the light went off, and Todd touched on it earlier in his report. The fact that Brooks Koepka didn't go to Brian Rolapp or anyone else at the PGA Tour when he wanted to come back, he called Tiger Woods because he knows he's the beacon right now. If you need to do something, if you need something done, it's got to go through Tiger Woods. He's working as hard now as he ever did on the golf course.
Your thoughts on this first 6 weeks of this PGA Tour season in 2026 and what we've seen so far?
I think PGA Tour has to be so happy with what they've seen so far. You've seen Scotty, you've seen Chris Goddard, you've seen Justin Rose, you've seen so many great players rise to the occasion at these iconic golf courses. That's really what they're trying to get to with this new model. They want to try to get to those fields at the best golf courses, best time of year.
And now the big cat has spoken. The 15-time major champ may not be done with the golf clubs. 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Golf Central. We'll see you then.